and welcome to Aftermarket, the podcast from Proactive Australia with its finger firmly on the investor pulse. Each month, we take a closer look at the issues shaping and shifting the markets, from cost of living to climate, geopolitics to geology, macroeconomics to medtech, and big data to battery metals. Please note that the views of our interviewees are not the views of Proactive investors. Seek independent investment advice before making any financial decisions, and remember that nothing you hear on this pod constitutes investment advice.
Okay, today on the pod, we're going to talk to senior multi-asset portfolio manager Brendan Paul about how to construct a share portfolio that can weather the risks of a volatile economic environment. In these uncertain times, it's important to find the balance between risk and safe bets when investing. Brendan has more than 20 years' experience in global financial markets, investing across asset classes, and it's exciting to have him on the pod today. Hi, Brendan.
Hi, Susanna. Thanks for having me.
First up, tell me about the current environment we find ourselves in. What's different about the current moment for investors?
I think it's a fascinating time to be involved in markets and to be an investor. We've really come to the opinion here at Atrium that we are at an important inflection point in markets. I think if you consider what's happened over the last 30 years of investing, you'll see that there's been, you know, really strong tailwinds behind markets. And what I mean by that is you've had interest rates falling consistently over that time frame from about 18% through to the lows of about 1% in March of 2020. And you've seen a really benign geopolitical environment where you had, a very stable world order, and you had, that meant that there was a lot of globalization. You had China growing strongly. You had them exporting deflation to the world. You had all these things that were really working in favor of markets, and particularly equity markets. And also bond markets for that matter. So that meant that, you know, your standard 60-40 portfolio, multi-asset portfolio did very, very well over that time frame. What's changed and what's different about now, to get to your question, is we think a number of these things are in reverse. So, you know, you can think about the pandemic and what that meant, that there was a huge amount of monetary and fiscal stimulus that got put into the system to respond to the pandemic. You know, policymakers were looking at economies being shut down, so they responded with a lot of stimulus. That was met by disrupted supply chains. And so we had this inflation impact that we're all living through right now. We know, is higher inflation than we've experienced over that past 30-year period. But what we think is also, and just as important at digging into and having a look at now, is some of those other things that are changing. So we know that there's increased geopolitical tensions in the world at the moment. You know, you only have to look at the tension between the US and China, trade wars, you know, tensions over Taiwan and its role as a global player in semiconductors are evidence of that. Further evidence is, you know, war on the doorstep of Europe for the first time pretty much since World War II. You've got with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And these sorts of things are inflationary, because what they've done is they've caused deglobalization. So supply chains have come back on shore. All these countries are going, I'm worried about pandemic, I'm worried about war, I want security of supply, I'm going to build my supply chain within my own country or my own sort of, you know, friendly neighbors. And that's higher cost at the end of the day. Other things that are at play, energy transition. You know, it's been building for a while, but the expenditure required get to a net zero situation, you know, it's been estimated by McKinsey, I think, that there's something like $9.7 trillion of capital expenditure required over the next sort of 20 years to get us to net zero. Finally, is in the US, last couple of years, they've passed bills that are going to introduce $2 trillion of new spending to reinvigorate their own infrastructure and rebuild sort of quite decrepit infrastructure in the United States to maintain international competitiveness. And that's all been come against a backdrop of what used to be a whole philosophy post the global financial crisis of balancing the books. that seems to be post the pandemic thrown out the window, and a lot of fiscal expenditure in response to these populist demands is coming through. So if I add all those things up, geopolitical, energy transition, fiscal spending, these are big drivers of what we think to be higher inflation and higher volatility of inflation in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. And what the so what for that as an investor is we think it has big implications on how you build a portfolio going forward.
I mean, it's one of those things where there's a you know, you live in interesting times and there's a lot of opportunity as well as risk. And perhaps you could talk to me then about how investors go about deciding whether to make risk exposed investments, and maybe if you could talk to me about the difference between volatility and tail risk.
Absolutely, sure. So this is a topic kind of really close to our heart at Atrium because we spend a lot of time thinking about risk. We have a risk-targeted investing philosophy, and we're always trying to look forward in terms of risks that are coming at us rather than look in the rearview mirror. And the distinction between tail risk and volatility is really important. So volatility refers to the variability of returns, and it's within normally considered within sort of standard deviations of or what's expected within a normal sort of bound of variation of returns. And that's one consideration of risk. The other consideration is what we call tail risk. And tail risk really refers to the idea of a permanent loss of capital. So you've got volatility, which is kind of a central part of the distribution and what you could expect, you know, your equity prices to move around. Out on the left-hand side, which is a large, large negative result in your equity portfolio, let's say, for example, that's the tail of the distribution. That's why it's called the tail risk. And that represents permanent loss of capital. And that's very important when you think about risk appetite for an investor, because what we're trying to do with our portfolios is keep investors safe from that left tail event or that risk of permanent capital loss. Because if they have a big drawdown in their portfolio, what happens is behavioral economics will tell you that that is very, very painful for investors, and they're likely to stop themselves out of their investment portfolio. Now, research shows that if they do that, that's actually a really bad outcome because they haven't been able to stay in the portfolio to enjoy the long run expected return of that portfolio. And a recent research by KPMG shows that in the COVID drawdown, you know, those that switched to cash out of their kind of growth super option, you know, in March 2020, 25% had been switched back into the growth portfolio by June. That represented a 7% loss of capital because they lost that return in the rebound in the portfolio. Those remaining in cash until December 2020, they lost 15% of their capital. They lost 15% of the opportunity cost of being or staying invested. So we think it's really important to consider that tail and to try and prevent that coming through in investors' portfolios.
Right. Well, that leads nicely to the next question, because clearly there are mistakes that investors are making when they're making decisions about risk. And obviously one of them is to exit in that sudden manner. Talk to me about other mistakes, common mistakes that investors make.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we've already sort of hinted strongly at two of them. One is to be backward looking. So looking at history of returns rather than think about what is the risk in my portfolio going forward from this point on, because returns are the obvious, very, you know, easy to see element of your portfolio. But what risk you're taking in terms of the future is a little harder to kind of get your head around. So like I said earlier, we spend a lot of time thinking about that forward-looking risk. And the other thing is not considering the tail risk that we've already spoken about. Two other things I think are worth mentioning, though, when you're building your portfolios at the current point in time. One is changing correlations. So in the past, where people may have used bonds to be defensive in an equity portfolio, you know, a multi-asset construct, we think you've got to think long and hard about the defensive quality of bonds at the moment, because if you expect inflation to be higher and more volatile than what it has been for the last 30 years, we know from history when that's the case, they're not very good at diversifying and helping an equity portfolio, because what happens is they become positively correlated. And what that means is that when equities go down, they also go down, and they're not giving you any sort of buffer. So one point that is a mistake that I think people might be making at this current point in time is relying too much on that backward looking return paradigm of the last 20 years and thinking bonds will keep doing the job for me. We can talk maybe a little bit later about how we handle that problem. But the other point I wanted to make right at the moment that is maybe not being picked up by some investors is some of the risk that's sitting in a passive strategy. So a strategy that, an ETF that just follows an index, the S&P 500 is a great example at the moment, where because of how strong the tech stocks have been, particularly the top seven stocks that everyone probably knows very well, the valuations that they are trading on, I mean, that there's, quite a lot of forward-looking risk in the assumptions that people are making about the growth of revenue and sales for revenue and earnings, beg your pardon, for companies like NVIDIA. So I'll give you an example. I think at the moment, the last time I checked, NVIDIA was trading on something like 25 times next year's revenue. So not earnings, but revenue. Now, to justify that kind of valuation, you really need to be looking at something like 30% annualized sales growth for the next 10 years for that to be a reasonable price.
Right.
And
gosh,
there's only two companies in history, I'm reliably informed, that have ever done that: Microsoft and Salesforce. So
right,
you're looking at, quite a lot of optimism built into these stocks at the moment. A lot of it's related to AI. I'll acknowledge that narrative is there. But to get back to my point, I guess what I'm saying is that because it's those stocks that have driven all the returns in the index, and they're such a big part of the index, they're like 25% of the S&P 500 at the moment, that if you're a layman sort of standing there going, I'm going to invest in this ETF, it's passive, you're actually taking on quite a lot of concentration risk in your portfolio at the moment that you might not be aware of.
That's a really interesting point. And I guess, speaking about concentration, and you mentioned diversification earlier, talk to me about diversification and the relationship between the compulsion to diversify in uncertain times, which is sort of it's the flip side of the coin of people thinking that past performance will predict future performance, which is what you've touched on. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think that is definitely what I think happens. As I said, when we go into uncertain times and there might be poor portfolio performance, again, people are looking backwards and considering the risks that have just been rather than the risks that are ahead. So if we go back to some of my earlier points, at the moment, we think that we are on the cusp of a different kind of market order, if you like, a different market regime going forward, one where we will have higher interest rates, higher nominal interest rates, and higher inflation volatility than what we're used to for the last 20 years. And that requires, a different kind of diversification. So I said earlier, we didn't think that bonds were going to do a terrific job of being a diversifier. So the question then is raised, so what do you do for diversification? How do you think about diversification at this point in time? And the way we think about that, which is actually how we've been approaching portfolios since our inception about 12 years ago, is that we look for what we call genuine diversification. Now, what that really means is we're looking for a range of investments where each individual investment makes sense on a standalone basis. But then we look at the relationship between each of those investments. And we want to be as sure as we can that the outcome for each of those investments is unrelated as possible. So we look for investing in strategies which have an absolute return focus. So to give you an example, we'd be looking at, macroeconomic based strategies that are able to trade in things like, grains and energy futures, electricity futures, sugar, orange juice futures, all these sorts of things. So I guess the point I'm making is that we're looking for strategies that are going to be truly different to the other risks that we have in the portfolio, which is owning some equities and owning some foreign currencies and things like that. So at the end of the day, you know, we spend our whole life kind of looking in under the hood of these strategies and trying to understand them intimately. And then for that reason, getting a strong confidence that having a portfolio of these things is something that is going to perform regardless of what happens with, you know, the trajectory of inflation, for example. So, you know, it's gaining that confidence, again, on a forward-looking basis, not trying to look at what's just happened or what's happened over the last 10 years, but just trying to, you know, clean sheet of paper, what do we think about the future, and do we think these strategies can perform in that future?
Right. Well, then, I mean, there's the $6 million question or the crystal ball question. How do we do that? What do you think is the best strategy for dealing with an environment where we don't know whether, you know, things will just do a complete 180?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, you know, the short answer, I guess, if you like, is pursuing our kind of philosophy of genuine diversification. So again, for looking for things that we think will be able to perform in a whole range of macroeconomic backdrops going forward. But then again, you might say, well, what does that really mean? Well, look, we have a multi-asset portfolio here. We have several multi-asset portfolios. They do own equities. We have an equity component. Within that equity component at the moment, we're focused on what we call a quality bias. What that means is we're looking for companies with really strong quality characteristics, and that goes to a really strong balance sheet, you know, really strong governance, strong structural growth drivers, you know, moats around their revenue streams, so that we can be confident that should we go into a recession, which is, you know, widely predicted, those equities are able to outperform in that environment. So quality focus in equities is one thing that we're doing. Another thing that we're doing is we're looking at, you know, those macroeconomic strategies that I mentioned earlier, those ones that are able to benefit from price trends in all sorts of assets, you know, gold, as I said, you know, cocoa futures, orange juice futures, you know, currency, bond markets, any global market, you know, regardless of the macroeconomic backdrop, it's looking at price trends and it's able to deliver absolute returns in that scenario. And the final one I'd probably add in there at the moment, which we think is quite fascinating, is we've found a strategy to invest in lately that looks at catastrophe bonds. Now these are bonds that are issued by insurance companies to protect against loss in natural disasters. So think of, you know, a hurricane on the east coast of the US or an earthquake in Japan or a wildfire in North America.
Floods in Queensland, yeah.
Yeah, all these sorts of insurance events. Now, you might say, well, you know, there's plenty of those happening at the moment, and that's true. But the way these bonds operate is they're issued with a coupon, just like a standard bond is. The loss is related to the chance of a natural disaster happening. But what's interesting for us is lately those coupons that were available on those bonds a couple of years ago was as low as about 4%. Now those bonds are paying nearly 14% because of the interest, because of the increase in interest rates, but also because of some dynamics in that market. And so you're getting 14% return, but your expected loss due to natural disaster from last year to this year is still the same. So the expected loss on these bonds that we're invested in is about 3%. So you can see in the last couple of years how your return for that risk has increased materially from about, you know, 1.5 times to up to, you know, greater than sort of, you know, 3 to 4 times. So our return for the risk we're taking has increased materially, but also importantly, the risk that we're taking around natural disaster, it's very different to the risk we're taking with the equities we're invested in. So we're looking for different types of risks that are going to be diversifying to our returns going forward. So that's probably kind of the biggest, you know, a couple of the biggest things we're looking at the moment in terms of building a portfolio that we think, you know, on a risk targeted basis, which is how we approach life at Atrium. We're always looking for maximizing returns for that risk that we spoke about earlier. And we think we've got, you know, really strong chance of building a portfolio that's robust to the future.
I'm not sure.
Regardless of what happens around some of those things that we spoke earlier in terms of, you know, the shifting investment landscape.
Mm. Look, there's a lot of food for thought there, and it's sort of about finding silver linings in uncertain times, really, and, you know, building returns from that. Look, thank you so much for being on the pod, Brendan. Really valued your insights and expertise. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Aftermarket. You can find more great investor-focused content at www.proactiveinvestors.com.au. Once again, don't take anything you hear on Aftermarket as investment advice. Do your own research. We'll be back again next month with more market chat. Bye for now.